I am calling. All right, let's start it again then. All right, the time is still 12:03, and we will begin the January 10th, 2019 meeting of the DC Board of Ethics and Government Accountability. My name is Tamika Collier. I am here with Shamari Wade and Darren Sobin, and we have board member Norma Hutchinson on the phone. So we, in fact, do have a quorum. The first meeting issue I'll turn to is adoption of the agenda. I will give you a few minutes to review the agenda and identify any changes.
Madam Chair, I would ask that we amend the agenda to remove item K1, R. Wilson. That was resolved at the last meeting.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? All right, all those in favor of adopting the agenda as amended, please signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, the agenda has been adopted as amended. Next, we will turn to our last meeting minutes. That's December 19th. I will give the board members a couple of minutes to review. All those in favor of adopting the meeting minutes, please signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? All right, the meeting minutes have been adopted. All right, we will now turn to Director Allen.
Good afternoon, Chairperson Collier and members of the board. I am Nikkel Allen, Director of the Office of Open Government, and I am pleased to present this monthly report of the activities of the OOG. The OOG has continued to fulfill its mission of ensuring that all persons receive full and complete information regarding the affairs of the district government and the actions of those who represent them. I'd like to begin with a report concerning the Open Meetings Act and FOIA advice. On January 7th, 2019, the OOG issued a FOIA advisory opinion to the Public Service Commission of the District of Columbia concerning the application of DC Official Code 2-534E to a FOIA request for the Public Service Commission's budgetary and financial records. The Commission sought to withhold the records pursuant to the attorney-client, attorney-work product, and deliberative process privileges. The Commission is currently in arbitration with the FOIA requester and contended that providing the requested records would reveal its theory of the case. OOG advised that the records related to the PSC's budget and expenditure of public funds are available to the public without a FOIA request under DC Official Code Sections 5-366 and 6A. However, the Commission's outside counsel's billing records could be redacted under DC Official Code 2-534E if they revealed privileged information. The OOG advised that the dollar amount spent was factual data and not subject to the privilege. With respect to the deliberative process privilege, OOG advised that the privilege might apply if the records concerning budget information were both pre-decisional and deliberative. The Commission did not offer its records to OOG to review, but OOG offered to conduct such a review if it would assist the PSC in making its determination.
And have you – go ahead.
I was just going to ask, you say they're in arbitration about the propriety of the withholding?
No, they're in arbitration about another matter with their attorneys who are represented by a union.
Okay.
And those are the requesters.
Oh, so they're using FOIA as
right.
Part of discovery. Has PSC responded to your request?
They have not. You? Yeah, they have not.
Think about this. I'm thinking of potential responses because I do think it's a good idea that you have offered to review it. But what would your response be if they came back and said, disclosing information that we allege to be protected by attorney-client privilege, work product protection or deliberative process privilege would waive the privilege because you are not the client. I don't know that it's true that it would, but right. I can see that being a basis for them not wanting you to review the information.
That's understandable because we're not a decision maker. I think if it had been a something that the mayor's office of legal counsel as a decision maker, they could do an in-camera review. But that's correct. So I would not want to destroy the privilege. So I will take that into consideration and make sure to advise the commission accordingly should they ask us to review. The next matter is informal OMA and FOIA advice. Since the December's board meeting, the OOG responses for formal and informal technical FOIA and open meetings advice are as follows. There were 3 FOIA and 4 Open Meetings Act substantive responses to requests and 3 responses to OMA requests for technical assistance. The next matter is OMA FOIA audits. The OOG completed a preliminary FOIA audit in December 2018 as reported to the board last month. As you know, district agencies are required to make certain information available online under DC Official Code 2-536. The audit reviewed the web pages of 95 public bodies, which included DC agencies, DC independent agencies, and the Office of the Attorney General and the DC Council. The audit reviewed the website's FOIA page to determine if 6 categories of the required records were available on the web page. These categories included employee information, administrative manuals, agency publications, agency policies, agency decisions, and financial information. Of the 95 websites reviewed, 23 were compliant with all categories. The OOG will contact the entities reviewed and inform them of the preliminary results this month and make a recommendation for corrective action where appropriate.
Excellent. That's a heavy lift.
Are you, outstanding. Are you planning to publish those results on their website?
I'm considering doing that because we did not look at the entire scope of what's required under the statute. This is just a preliminary review.
I think, in all fairness, you should give the agencies an opportunity to make corrective measures
right.
before we out them.
Yes, right. That's what I was thinking. Okay. All right. Next, the fiscal year 2020 budget. The OOG, along with the Office of Government Ethics, continues to work on the FY 2020 budget, and there are no updates on the OOG's budget enhancement request at this time. Training and outreach. The OOG, in connection with the DC Bar, has completed the full film, which is published on YouTube. The film consists of 9 short films concerning the District of Columbia Freedom of Information Act and the Office of Open Government. The OOG will publish and release the videos on the Open Government webpage in the near future. I do have it to present to the board, but we have not been able, for technical reasons, to get it working on WebEx. We didn't get audio. So I can show it to the board after the meeting, and if anyone in the public would like to view it, it's available on our YouTube page in full.
Okay.
So there are, it's 9 minutes and they're short, so we do need to, you know, edit them. But since I'm presenting them today, I just published the whole thing.
Great. I look forward to watching.
Maybe a little painful for me, but I'll bear it. The Director of Open Government, myself, attended the swearing-in ceremony of Mayor Emilio Bowser, Attorney General Carl Racine, Council Chairman, and several members of the D.C. Council on Wednesday, January 2nd, 2019.
By invitation?
Yes, by invitation.
Very nice. You didn't crash it.
I did not crash it. No, they were happy that I was there. And next matter, the OOG commends the board for releasing its best practices report on December 31st, 2018, which includes recommendations concerning open government. The OOG will follow up with the executive branch and DC Council concerning the first party identification requirements for FOIA requesters and the electronic mail retention recommendations of the board.
That best practices report, we didn't use best practices in order to get it. So next year, the board will expect more and earlier input from both offices. This was the first year where we're doing a combined report, and the requirements were a little different than what the offices have been usually reporting. But I want to make sure that we are actually answering the questions that we are now supposed to answer thoroughly. And the House bill that I have no idea, I didn't check to see if the president has now signed it. I suspect with the government shutdown, it has still not been signed. But it has a lot of good tidbits in it. And next meeting, if you could brief the board on those that impact or potentially could impact how DC views open government access to data. Some of it we already do, but that act goes further than anything I've seen, and we're already talking about it at work.
Okay. We'll make sure to do that next meeting. And the next matter is rulemaking. The Office of Open Government has submitted for consideration by the board new and revised regulations to implement the recent changes in the law, which make clarifying amendments to the OOG regulations at 3 DCMR section 104000. And we have met with the board's counsel, Ms. Ford. We're planning to set up a meeting to go over those regulations next week.
Okay.
Staffing is the last matter. The announcement to fill the IT specialist position was posted on December 9, 2018, and is set to run through January 23, 2019. OOG and OGE are also working with the Office of the Chief Technology Officer to procure temporary support for the office as a whole's information technology needs until the position is filled.
And do you have an ETA when you think you'll have someone?
I'll have to defer to.
They kind of indicated it would be a long process. They gave us the tab, which was really about $18,000, one resource for 9 weeks. But we haven't followed up with them since then.
Okay.
Again, the plan was for the town to put our heads together
right.
And look at the budgetary impact to see how much we would be able to afford. It may end up being a wash compared to what a lot of salaries was.
This concludes the OOG Director's Report for January 10th, 2019. Thank you.
Thank you. I just had one question about training. Have there been any boards or commission training set up? I want to make sure that the office is being invited to participate and.
Yes, we're still waiting to hear from Steve Walker and his revised schedule. Since they've just had a new group come in, we anticipate that schedule coming soon. We have had some individual requests for boards to be trained. We've received one today.
So
people know that we're out there. And also the Attorney General's ethics officer asked about training, and we're going to work with her to set up possibly a training portfolio just of classes to have here. So she was interested in us doing something similar to what DOJ does on the FOIA side. So we're in discussions with her about that.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have you attended any outside events with respect to open government advocates or groups?
I have some on the schedule for next week, so I will. Well, I have one today. I have the Open Government Coalition meeting today.
They're meeting today?
Yes.
Do you have their agenda?
I do not.
Are you speaking at the meeting?
I am not. I'm just participating.
Okay. Good. Let us know.
Thank you. I will.
Director Wolfenbarger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Update on the status of the Office of Government Ethics Operations. These reported statistics do not reflect status changes that we anticipate will occur as a result of actions taken by the board during today's meeting. Open investigations by status. We have a grand total of 31 open investigations. 27 are actual open investigations. 2 are open for show cause hearings before the director on ministerial fines, and 2 are open in negotiations. pending state investigations by status. We have 12 investigations that are closed pending collection. One is closed pending appeal to the D.C. Court of Appeals. Two are closed pending D.C. Superior Court appeal. Two are stayed based on OAG False Claims Act cases. Five are stayed due to law enforcement investigations. And three are stayed due to U.S. District Court cases, for a total of 25 cases that are either closed, pending collection, or stayed for some reason. Regulatory matters by status, we have 27 that are closed pending collection. One is open, two are open on appeal to the director, and one is open on an appeal to the board. Investigations currently open, as indicated, currently total of 31. That's the same as last month and is a reduction from 35 in November. Investigations stayed inactive. It's 10 current that stayed consistent the past 3 months. Publication and reporting obligations. We are in the process of preparing the quarterly complaint report for the first quarter of fiscal 19. As I mentioned last month, although we did not adopt any new performance measures for fiscal 19, we have identified new statistics related to our regulatory enforcement matters and audits that we will report in fiscal 20, and we have begun keeping track of those stats in fiscal 19 to use as a benchmark for comparisons later. Trainings, outreach, none were attended by the staff since the board's last meeting on December 19th. Conducted by staff since the date of the last meeting 22 days ago, we conducted or participated in only two trainings, which is less than the nine we conducted the previous month. The two trainings consisted of a new employee orientation and a training session at the State Board of Education for new members.
And in all fairness, it was not only a short period of time between the last meeting, but the holidays intervened as well.
Absolutely. I think I calculated it up as like 12 or 13 business days. So it was a very compact period this time. Newsletter. OGE's December newsletter has been published on Vega's website. Now that the holiday season is behind us, I am working with the Mayor's Communications Director, Anu Rangappa, to coordinate sending our January newsletter to the all DC government employees distribution list per our prior discussions with the Mayor's office. I swapped emails with her yesterday, and she's just asked that when our January newsletter is finalized to pass it along for them to review and for them to determine when they believe it would be strategically advantageous to release it through the distribution list without conflicting with any other outgoing messages.
And if I recall correctly, it's one time and people will have the ability to sign up or opt in to receiving future correspondence?
Correct. And the alternative distribution channels that we're going to use is sending them to the agency ethics officers with requests that they then forward on to their individual agency employees.
So for the mass distribution, is that just the OGE newsletter, or is that both offices' newsletter?
My plan would be for us to time the release to coincide with the OOG's preparation of their newsletter so that both go out at the same time. Advisory opinions or advice, informal advice, approximately 39, which is lower than the 113 reported at the last meeting. And formal advice requests, we have pending one formal request for post-employment advice.
Did we talk about this the last meeting? How long has this one been pending?
I thought this was a new one. Is that correct?
No, it's the same one.
Same one.
And how long has this been pending?
I believe we received the request on December 5th, but I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
Maybe you could check. Verify.
We'll do.
We still have the 30-day standard?
Yes. Ethics legislation / comprehensive code of conduct. We are anticipating that Councilmember Charles Allen will introduce the comprehensive code of conduct this council period.
You mean reintroduce?
Well, for them, first time. Did she indicate a time period, like when they intended to do it?
No.
That they had other pressing matters.
Let's talk about that, because I think it's a great idea for them to introduce it if they're going to introduce it. If they're not, then we should go ahead. Are you comfortable that they're going to introduce it and not just sit on it for this session?
I felt pretty comfortable that they were going to act upon it when we met with them earlier this week. I didn't get any indication that they were deliberately holding back on it, but there was discussions about the upcoming performance oversight hearings followed by the budget oversight hearings. I know we've swapped emails with Kate this morning regarding the need to move our oversight hearing from February 27th to now the afternoon of February 19th. So I think that her focus has been primarily on that.
She did specifically mention that they did not have to hold another hearing on the bill.
Correct.
Oh, well, that's positive. That's okay. That's positive. Okay. So oversight is February the 19th?
Yes. As of this morning.
Okay.
Rulemaking. We have no new developments to report. Budget. I am working with our case management system vendor on the last phase of the data migration project, which involves importing the digital files from ProLaw and in some instances from the shared drive into CMTS. Those additional services were not covered by our contract to purchase the software, but a purchase order has been issued, and the vendor and I have been working on that phase of the project for about a week now. We hope to have that last phase of the project completed within the next 2 weeks. I actually spent a little bit of time this morning downloading the software necessary to do the FTP protocol transfer of the files, but I had to pause due to the meeting. I'll pick that back up later this afternoon. On Wednesday, Brian and I met with staff members from the Council's Committee on the Judiciary and Public Safety to discuss a variety of subjects, including the Comprehensive Code of Conduct and our request for an FY20 budget enhancement for funding to secure additional office space. We will continue working with Director Allen, the Mayor's Administration, and the Council to forge an FY20 budget for the agency that is adequate for our needs.
Did you speak to DGS regarding the office space?
We have not talked to DGS yet. When I spoke with Inspector General Lucas last, they're in the same type of discussions with DGS, and he is going to provide me with the contact information of the person at DGS that they have been working with to secure substitute space. So that's my plan, is once I get that contact information to follow up with that individual.
So I think now, 2 meetings ago, we talked about us having insider information about an agency moving out of this building, and there might be an opportunity for us to jump in to get some additional space if the goal was to stay in this building. Have we lost that opportunity?
I don't believe so. I just have not had an opportunity to follow up with Free, who is the she works with A1. I think she may be A1's supervisor. She was the one that gave me the insight into the pending availability of additional space in this building. So I'll follow up with her for
Eden?
More details.
Eden?
No, Eden is no longer there. It's her nickname is Free.
I don't know.
Staffing. I would like to introduce you to our new investigator, Ralph Bradley, who just joined us on Monday. Ralph spent 24 years conducting criminal, civil, and administrative investigations with the U.S. Customs Service and the Department of Homeland Security, including 8 years managing operations and administrative functions as the resident agent in charge of the agency's Tallahassee, Florida office. Prior to joining Customs, he served as a police officer at the University of West Florida and as a captain in the United States Air Force following his graduation from Virginia Tech. And we're very pleased to have added Ralph to our staff.
Welcome, Mr. Bradley.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
We have also selected a candidate for our compliance specialist position. After initially running into some resistance at DCHR, I spoke with Associate Director Donnell Daniels this week and was able to secure his assistance to allow us to move forward with our preferred candidate. Per my conversation with Sergeant Major Daniels yesterday afternoon, DCHR is making arrangements for our preferred candidate to report to our office on January 24th, which is 2 weeks from today. Litigation. Garen Price, this case was submitted on October 24th, 2018, and we are awaiting the court's decision. Larry Hicks, this is an enforcement collection action filed to reduce the board's $20,000 fine imposed on Mr. Hicks to judgment. On January 8th, Judge Jackson issued an order granting the district's motion for summary judgment in this matter. According to the order, Mr. Hicks has 60 days to pay his $20,000 fine or risk additional sanction from the court. And the third matter is Rashawn French versus Bega, D.C. Superior Court case. An employee appealed the imposition of a $600 ministerial fine related to non-filing of the financial disclosure statement. The pro se case was filed on April 6th. Mr. French failed to file an opening brief. On November 16, 2018, the case was dismissed for lack of prosecution, and on December 27, 2018, we submitted a request to OPRS to garnish $300 for Mr. French's next two paychecks to satisfy his fine. Once we have confirmation that Mr. French has been garnished the full $600 fine, we will close the matter.
Still a government employee?
He is. Lobbyist financial disclosure matters. We still have approximately 200 public financial disclosure statement non-filers. We plan to refocus the FDS enforcement when our new compliance specialist is onboarded in the coming weeks. Attorney Stuart Mitchell drafted an ethics counselor financial disclosure manual, which we are reviewing and editing the manual with the hopes of publishing it and distributing it to ethics counselors at the start of the 2018 FDS season in February.
In the Dropbox. Very nice work. One thing I would suggest, though, at the very end, maybe one page of FAQs with references to the page number where the bigger explanation can be found. Good work.
And I'll discuss the lobbyist program in just a few moments.
So going back to the FDS, we had significant problems the last rollout. And I'm cognizant that you have a compliance specialist coming on board. We'll need time. But the board will want an update well in advance of the filing season in terms of what your plan is for notice to the filers, ensuring that they have an appropriate number of days to respond, and that tech support is in place.
Sure.
So we can revisit this in more detail in February, but we're 0-3 with rollouts, and so at this point, I'm going to start asking more specific questions.
Understandable. Financial disclosure waiver requests. We have one waiver request in case number 19-0010-R, Ivan Ortiz.
Good morning, board members.
Good morning.
On November 26, 2018, the responder requested a waiver of the $300 fine levied against him by the Office of Government Ethics due to his failure to timely file his 2017 public financial disclosure statement. Respondent asked that the fine be waived because he was under the impression that he didn't have to, that he had not been designated to file this year, excuse me, and he received the many notices that we sent to him by email and snail mail. The Office of Government Ethics, we had to go in and manually update the respondent's email address. We didn't have the proper email address on file, so we did that on December 17, 2018. Respondent filed the form on January 7, 2019. The Office of Government Ethics does not oppose respondent's request.
Remind us, what did we say last month about this?
We were tabling him last month because he hadn't filed as of the last meeting, but I emailed him two or three times about a week ago, and apparently he was out of town. His mother was sick, yada, yada. But after my second or third email to him, he did respond, and he ended up filing the form on the 7th.
And have you reviewed it? Is it sufficient?
There's nothing to worry about on the form.
And is he a current D.C. government employee?
He is.
Okay. All right, any other questions? All those in favor of accepting the recommendation from the Office of Government Ethics approving the waiver of Mr. Ortiz in matter 19-0010R, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, waiver request has been granted.
Lobbyist program. Last month, we partnered with OCTO to conduct four training webinars for the new lobbyist e-filing system that went live for the January registration and reporting period. This is the lobbyist's first time filing under the new statutory amendments and their first time using our new system. And although the system appears to be functioning effectively, our rollout of the new system was not as smooth as we would have liked. OCTO has dedicated the full-time services of two IT resources during January to help resolve any customer service issues related to the new system that arise, and we are working closely with OCTO to improve the timeliness and effectiveness of our coordinated customer service responses. Our staff have been instructed to triage incoming customer service calls to identify those that involve programmatic or policy questions regarding BEGA's intervention, requiring BEGA's intervention, versus those requiring technical support with the new system, which can be more effectively addressed by OCTO staff. Callers with IT-related issues are instructed to file a support ticket online so that OCTO can better track outstanding issues with our system and note when problems are resolved. It should be noted that although constructive criticism regarding the logistics of our rollout is well-warranted and taken to heart, many users have complimented both BEGA and OCTO staff for providing high-quality customer service for their questions and concerns since January 1st. We have also received favorable feedback from some users who felt that the new system constitutes a marked improvement over our old lobbyist e-filing system, and we plan to build upon those successes to provide a more expansive, favorable experience for the rest of our lobbying customers in the days and weeks ahead. We have prepared a public statement regarding our transition to the new e-filing system that will be posted to our website later today and distributed via email to all persons who were lobbying registrants in the old system. We have also updated our frequently asked questions document for the lobbying program to reflect the statutory changes that were enacted in October, and that document is also being posted to our website and distributed via email to the lobbying registrants. We are also working with OCTO to schedule two additional training webinars on the new system next week so that any registrants who were unable to participate in the sessions we conducted in December would have another opportunity to benefit from that training. Ashley made a very excellent suggestion this morning, and we're going to ask Mr. McDermott to conduct one webinar without any participants so that he can just walk through the system without being interrupted by questions, and we will record that session to hopefully provide a better, more focused training tool in the future. OCTA is also working on a visual guide to the new system that we think registrants will find useful, but I've asked them to focus their efforts at this time primarily on quickly resolving the technical support issues that users are currently experiencing with the system while assigning bandwidth to the development of the training guide as their resources have time available to do so. As of the close of business yesterday, 120 separate users had successfully logged into the new lobbyist system. 77 users had submitted their 2019 registration reports, while another 26 users had begun the registration process. 88 registrants have submitted their lobbyist activity reports for the period running from July 1st, 2018 to December 31st, 2018, while another 61 registrants have partially completed but not yet submitted their LARs.
Can you give us some examples of some of the technical problems you've been encountering?
It's not really so much login issues. It's more understanding how to navigate through the system. It is
counterintuitive than the old one?
It's not really so much counterintuitive as it's just a change from what people are used to. So it's organized a little differently, and it's been our experience that once people play with the system a little bit and they understand the logic behind the way it was organized, they appreciate and like it. But, you know, it is such a dramatic change from the old system that people are having a little bit of difficulty wrapping their minds around the differences.
And it's asking for more detailed information, too.
Correct. To reflect some of the statutory changes.
Okay.
How many outstanding complaints does OCTO have, or trouble tickets?
I have asked for an updated numbers. I have not received those. At last word, there were, I believe there had been 25 submitted, and I think 10 were still pending resolution. I've also asked him to provide me with detailed information regarding the average turnaround time. They hadn't been keeping track of the turnaround time for customer service telephone calls that they received that we were originally asking customers to make. OCTO asked us to direct people to the online ticket support system so that they be able to provide more detailed information regarding how long it takes them to get the problems resolved.
Understanding that there were resource issues with not having a compliance specialist, but why didn't we have this public statement, this training, the frequently asked questions in place prior to?
It's all my fault. I mean, it's something that I did not dedicate sufficient attention to during the holidays. I was primarily focused on the data migration and the document migration into the new case management system. We were working with Sonia, who was kind of taking the lead, but she wasn't really, I don't believe, tasked with that aspect of the transition. It's really the responsibility is mine.
And you are putting measures in place so that this does not happen again?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The next matter on the agenda is non-confidential investigations. Case involving Antoine Wilson and Henry Jennifer Niles, pursuant to Official Code 1-1162-.12, subsection A, we conducted formal investigations into whether the actions of former Chancellor Antoine Wilson and former Deputy Mayor Jennifer Niles in connection with the Chancellor's daughter's mid-year transfer to an out-of-boundary school during the 2017-2018 school year violated the Code of Conduct. Our team is still negotiating with the respondents regarding the terms of potential negotiated dispositions to resolve these charges, and we anticipate presenting such agreements or notices of violation for the board's consideration during its February monthly meeting. We had hoped to finalize those agreements prior to today's meeting, as I explained at the December board meeting, but with only 12 business days elapsing since the December meeting due to the holidays, that goal proved overly optimistic. And the other non-confidential investigation is In re Jack Evans. This formal investigation into allegations that Council Member Evans violated the Council Code of Conduct is currently stayed. And that's all I have.
Thank you. All right, now we will have an opportunity for public comment. I will remind any members of the public that you have 3 minutes. Do we have anyone?
Yo, Madam Chair. Happy New Year. Hopefully the new will be a bit better than one that passed. Be nice to me. I'm a tender, sensitive guy. Jack Evans is put on hold again. Why? Before there will be action taken. Number two, I haven't heard a word about Brandon Todd. I weighed into the Board of Elections campaign finance meeting yesterday. They indicate in tandem they're working with VIGA regarding the misuse of the councilman's resources, staffers, and whatnot to endorse the mayor's choice for the School Board of Education. And I haven't heard a word on VIGA's end and what's being done. So if you could elucidate, enlighten us, please.
Sure. Regarding the Evans investigation, that, Matt, we have stayed our investigation because of an ongoing law enforcement investigation. And regarding the Brandon Todd allegations that have been circulated in the public, there are rules regarding the way BEGA has to conduct its investigations and at what stage those investigations become public. And with that being said, at this point in time, I am not at liberty to discuss the status of any BEGA investigation that might be open regarding Councilmember Todd.
I want to thank Nicole Ellen for giving me a heads up about the time change. So I can schedule my time accordingly, and also any hard copy that's available. And you have my address, right? Give it to you now if you'd like, Madam Chair.
Oh, we have your address, and we can. I will give you a call to find out all the information that you need.
Thank you.
Do we have any other public commenters? Hearing none, I now move that the board adjourn into executive session to discuss ongoing confidential investigations pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-575B. To consult with an attorney to obtain legal advice and to preserve the attorney-client privilege between an attorney and a public body pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-57B4A, to discuss personnel matters including the appointment, employment, assignment, promotion, performance, evaluation, compensation, discipline, demotion, removal, or resignation of government employees, or officials pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-575B10, and to deliberate on a decision in which the Ethics Board will exercise quasi-judicial functions pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-575B13. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, the time is now 12:45. We are now in executive session. Thank you. Then the time is now 1:25. We have resumed the public portion of the meetings. We have no matters to report out. The next meeting will be February... February 7th at 10 a.m. This meeting is adjourned.
Tamika?
Yes, Tamika.
Norma, what time is the oversight hearing on the 19th?
They just said the afternoon. We haven't gotten anything formal.
Okay. Okay. I'll plan to be there.
Thank you.
Okay. I think that's it.
Okay.
Do we have any outstanding issues? We don't.
That one waiver, but that was not public, was it?
It was public, but it's not something. It was already public,
right.
So we don't report.
Oh, right. We did it in the public
in
session.
Public.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. There's nothing in there.
I think I owed you something. Maybe not. Maybe not. It'll come to me.
Oh. Okay. Shamari, when are you...
What are you thinking about leaving
The
day after the February.
The what?
The day after the February.
Oh, so you'll be here for more meetings.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So hopefully that gives them a little time to...
It'll give us time to get your plaque. I think they will nominate someone before.
I realize that there is something else I wanted to talk to you guys about. Does anybody get a
chance? We can't now.
This is.
Oh.
Did anybody speak to Wada when he was in the office earlier today?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I believe he may be applying for the IT vacancy when it's posted.
He did sound like...
The one that he just left, or?
Yeah.
He wasn't happy.
He was not. The grass isn't always greener.
Work out 4 hours a day.
Well, there's still...
See, here's the thing. Here's the thing. He's too over... Even whether he did work or not, he's overqualified for what we need in IT support for our offices. I mean, I reject the idea that you pay people more because they have master's degrees and all this stuff. If the position doesn't warrant it, the position doesn't warrant it. That's what Tracy tried to give him an increase. Like, well, what does he do to warrant an increase? He's got a master's degree now.
Business card from the auditor's office and referred to it as his temporary business card.
Is that where he went? The
Thank you.